Welcome, everyone. Today we're going to be talking about types of soup I like. I have always enjoyed lentil. That's not true, actually. I did not when I was younger, but I enjoy lentil now. I'm sorry, I misled you there.
What's the other name for lentil? Not split. What's the one?
Oh, split pea
No, 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 no. Something ninny.
Bubble and squeak.
No, that's not a soup. That's a bean dish, which I also love. All right, Osnott, let me hear you in the thingy.
Tell us about soups you like.
I like lentil soups, too.
Into the microphone, please.
And also...
into the microphone. Stop
microphone
like? Him.
Microphone. I'm sorry. Soups. I don't like soups.
That's not true at all.
How can that be?
Corn soup. Chinese corn soup.
Corn soup.
Wow.
All right, I think we're rolling.
We're doing it live. You ready, Osnott?
Episode about soups.
Yeah, all prepped on soup. Do you want to think about Purim for a minute?
No.
Purim, which of course comes at the end of soup season.
Welcome to Jew-ish. So, it's Purim, and unrelatedly, my baby brother and his lovely, charming girlfriend Osnott, who is Israeli, were in town to see the cherry blossoms. So, before they left, I forced them to sit down with me and record a little mini-sode about this super fun Jewish holiday, and just tell us a little bit about how it's different in the U.S. versus Israel, and a little bit about the story of Esther, Vashti, King Ahasuerus, Mordecai, and the bad guy, Haman. Boo! So, for those of you who have never heard of it, and even those who have, enjoy getting to know Purim, and apologies in advance for butchering the story. Apparently, I have been out of Sunday school for too long. But I will include actual good information about it in the show notes. Okay, Chag Purim Sameach, everyone. So anyway... it's Purim, and I don't think I can think of the word Purim without hearing Purim Carnival, just because Sunday school. So
right.
We always had the Sunday school Purim Carnival every single year, and there was fully like a dunking booth, and do you know what that is, Osnott?
You throw a ball at something, and then someone falls into
yes.
the water?
Yes, which always
we
reminds
don't have
me...
It.
That always reminds me of Monty Python, where the witch, what is it? Drowner, if she drowns, she's a witch. If she drowns, she's not a witch. That's what it is, right? It always reminds me of dunking booths. But like dunking booths, costume parties, face painting. So Purim
Carnival.
Like
some people would call it the Jewish Halloween, which is actually quite offensive. Both
Why?
To Jews and Halloween.
excuse me. I love both holidays. Why is it offensive?
True, it's not.
Halloween is the American Purim.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you
yeah.
go.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for Purim was never based on a pagan holiday. Although.
I don't know.
Actually, having said that, you just discovered that it was based on who?
That there's some theory out there that the characters themselves are based on an earlier Mesopotamian myth because the names Mordechai and Esther, the main Jewish characters, are very similar to Marduk and Ishtar, who are gods in the Babylonian pantheon.
And this is how nerds ruin everything.
I don't have a more descript theory than that, but...
All right, so having said all that, I guess we should start with the basics. So Purim is a Jewish holiday that is very beloved, especially by kids and families. It's a very family-friendly Jewish holiday because you get to dress up. You dress up in costumes, you eat cookies, the hamantaschen. You sing and dance, and everyone gets to pick a character and play a role. Cross-dressing is traditional way back when. I would have to read up on, like, where that started. But it, as always, really, right? Like, it was always traditional for, like, men to dress up as Esther, sort of in a vaudevillian kind of way. But it's not a religious holiday, which is, I think, really interesting. It's based on the story of Esther and King Ahasuerus and Mordecai, who we love, I suppose. And it's from the Megillah. There's a deeper explanation that is in the annals of my brain from Mom and Abba about, you know, the theory that during the time of the rabbis, when it was being decided which texts would come in and which texts would not to become part of the official Torah, it's fascinating that we can't really ever know. But of course, there's theories from like, because God is never mentioned, to that it's a story of defiant women. Two, that, you know, there's a lot of like sex and murder in this one.
That's true. There's more intrigue.
There is. It's a little bit, you know, it's a little scandalous, but you know, we don't die in the end. So I guess there's that.
It's the only story that has no mention of God. We saved ourselves that time.
I like that. We saved ourselves that time.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all, just butting in here to give a little note. Zeb and I kind of went on a tangent here, but the Book of Esther is included in the Tanakh, the full Hebrew Bible. It is one of the books in the Ketuvim, which are the writings. It was not found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, and there is quite a bit of discussion about why this is and about there having been some resistance to including it in the canon in the first place. But the holiday of Purim is not mentioned in the Torah at all. So that is interesting. Okay. I don't know, man. I was in a lot of Purim plays. I remember one time that we... Do you remember the one we did based on Greece?
Rabbi
Kohan... But now that I look back on it, it was a little strange because I was for sure in high school and I was the Sandy character. And it was... There's something about wearing a black halter top and a midriff showing tight on the bima with the rabbi in his leather coat. Do you remember?
It sounds familiar.
It was... yeah.
I can remember rehearsals.
God, I wish I could remember some of those songs. But all I can remember is Chag Purim, Chag Purim. Do you know
go?
The rest of it?
Hagadola Yeladim, yes.
There we go.
Oh, actually, I'm not sure if it's La Yeladim or La Yehudim. There are two versions. Uh-huh. I'm not sure which one is the true.
But you can do two verses, right? We can do one of each. Chag Purim, Hagadola
Yeladim.
What do you think, Yeladim or Yehudim? Hagadola Yeladim.
Okay. What does that mean?
Big holiday for the kids or a big holiday for the Jewish people?
Oh. So that's what I remember from Purim. Purim carnivals, dunking booths, dressing up as Sandy, but I guess it was really Esther, which is actually, now that I think about it, pretty cool that I got to be Esther because she is the main character. But in Israel, as we have discovered, since Osnat has come and we've compared notes on a lot of things, what do you do in Israel for Purim? Is it the same?
I think the main difference is that it's Purim for everyone and not only for your Hebrew school from 4 to 6. So it's like 3 days that everyone just wears costume everywhere they go. You can go buy grocery and like be...
Oh, so it's just like a festival season. Like you just walk around in costume.
3 whole days wearing costumes no matter where you go. I mean, especially in like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, but I guess most places. And we have the Mishloach Manot. You don't have Mishloach Manot here.
We don't really do it, no. But it's one of the mitzvahs of the holiday, apparently. Can you describe what that is?
I mean, I feel like Halloween is based on Purim because of the candy stuff, but it's not.
It's not. I can link to a very interesting show about the origins of Halloween, but it's amazing. Throughline, once again, kills it, but they're just the best. Anywho, go on.
So Mishloach Manot, I guess that originally it's like giving something for the poor people, like we like to do in Judaism, but we just make a Mishloach Manot, which is a basket of candies, and on Purim day, you come to school and then you get a note of a name of someone else in class and you switch your Mishloach Manot with him. And then you get a different basket filled with candies. That's it.
So you're switching candy for worse candy?
Sometimes. Sometimes that's what happens, yeah.
It's like you give anonymous gift baskets, basically.
Oh.
Right?
To each other or to poor people?
Or not anonymous.
To each other.
To each
other. To another kid in class.
Oh, okay. So it's almost really like what we do for Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah, true. And then you have the reading of the Megillah, right? But that's...
And we like
we did
to
that
say...
Too.
Oh, we did.
Maybe that's when we did the play.
We did. We did the whole Megillah because that's where it comes from, right?
That's where the phrase comes from.
The whole Megillah. So it is one of the 5 scrolls, the Megillot. But what are the other 5 scrolls? So there's all these... All of them are not...
Ruth
is not part of the 5 books. It is the Book of Ruth, correct?
Yeah.
Book of Ruth, Book of Esther. I guess none of us are like religious enough to know this off the top of our
head. No. This would be a question for our parents.
We're all a little Jew-ish. I'm sure mom will call and have some insight. What else happens in Israel?
That's it. You go to a lot of Purim parties. You dress with a little clothes, although it's usually still very cold. And you act like it's not cold at all.
That is like Halloween, yes.
Mm-hmm. And we also have like a costume contest.
Oh, do you have it like in school and everywhere? It's not
everywhere.
Just... Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have one every day if it's 3 days?
Depends on where do you go. If you go to a lot of like Purim parties.
Oh, so there's Purim parties.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a whole festival, a 3-day youth festival.
That's amazing. Do cities dress? I mean, I almost said cities dress up. Do cities decorate and
stuff? And I forgot the best part. Mm-hmm. We have Adloyada. Adloyada, it's like the mitzvah of Purim. Adloyada, mm-hmm. It means to drink until you don't know anything.
Oh, to black out? You're supposed to. It's a commandment. Yep. You're commanded to black out during Purim.
But that's also, yeah, it is a mitzvah, yeah. But
awesome. Jews have fun.
It's also the name of the parade. We have, like, the big cities have Adloyada, which is just a Purim parade, where the big one have, like, big cars, meitzagim,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Going. And
displays.
Displays, yeah. And, like, little kids dancing around them and going the main street. And everyone comes with their costumes. And it's fun. A little bit like St. Patrick's Day had in Philly. I don't know if it happens everywhere.
A parade with a
St.
street
Patrick's
festival.
Day. Yes. And it does indeed happen everywhere. They do floats. They do Purim floats.
What floats?
The float is what you saw at the St. Patrick's Day parade, where it's like it's like a car with a platform and a whole motif on top of it that just drives down the street.
Big one. Very big. Nice one.
That is so funny.
You told me before that Purim is your favorite holiday, Osnat, right?
It is.
I guess on some level we should probably start going over the story of Esther. Well, I guess the story of Purim. And the Cliff's Notes from my memory are essentially that there is a king who comes to power, King Ahasuerus, who wants to marry the most beautiful girl in all the land, you know, the same old line up the virgins thing. From the JWA.org, after Esther becomes queen, her cousin Mordecai becomes involved in a power struggle with the Grand Vizier, Haman the Agagite. Boo! Also, that's a thing you're supposed to yell.
Oh, that's
make
right.
noise
boo,
every time we
boo.
Say the name of Haman.
Boo!
With a Rashan.
Boo! A descendant of the Amalekite king who was an enemy of Israel during the time of King Saul.
Oh, of course.
Naturally. Mordecai refuses to bow before Haman. Yes, this is another thing where Jews get in trouble because they won't bow. This is a whole, you know, it's a motif. We don't bow. We only bow to God. So that's the whole. This is what's so interesting, though, is because if the book never mentions God, but that's what I was always taught, is that Jews can't bow to a king because we already have a king, so to say. And you're not. And it ain't you. You're just a person. And I can't do that. So Haman resolves not only to put, this is why, duh, I forgot, this is the infuriating offense. Mordecai won't bow, and he says, I'm a Jew, I can't. And Haman decides to slaughter the entire people. He secures the king's permission to do this, and the date is set, the 13th of Adar.
There's another confusing thing about Purim, where it's celebrated in different days, if you're surrounded by a wall or not.
Walls,
you know it?
Really?
For some reason, yeah. There's Purim and Shushan Purim.
If, like in Jerusalem, the cities that are in the wall celebrate Purim, I think a day after, for some reason.
Yeah, there are a few holidays that are 2 days long if you're in Jerusalem. Yeah.
Oh, so what you're saying is be in Jerusalem or you can party hardy. Next year in Jerusalem, 2 days of Purim. So Mordecai gets wind of the plot, rushes to the palace to inform Esther, weeping and clothed in sackcloth. At this point in the story, Esther's character comes to the fore when she first learns of Haman's plot and the threat to the Jews. Her reaction is one of helplessness on pain of death. She cannot approach the king without being summoned. Ah, right. I remember that. So she has to get herself summoned. Oh, no, she risks it. That's right. She risks it on the pain of death. Following Mordecai's insistent prodding, she resolves to do what she can to save her people, ending with the ringing declaration, I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. All right. So we celebrate. I mean, the way I was sort of raised to understand Purim was a number of things. Celebrating the sort of, shall we say, disobedience of women. I don't want to say disobedience, but certainly like the celebrating women bucking arbitrary control measures, I should say. And that, you know, you're sort of congratulated for doing that, where it's like, no, no, no. But also that attitude of like, I have to do what's right. And if I die, I die. But I have to do this thing, whether it's not bowing to a false idol, basically.
There's also the first story of Ahasuerus' first wife, Vashti, of why is he looking for a new wife is because...
Oh, he killed her.
I I remembered the story that he was drinking with his buddies one time, and they told him, summon your wife to come dance for us, and she refused to dance nude. And then
he kicked her out.
Yeah, I think he didn't kill her, though. I think he was like, well, I'll just get a new wife.
Yeah.
I do remember that. God, how could I have forgotten? I always loved Queen Vashti for that.
Yeah, people always also, although she's a fleeting character that just sort of sets up the story, people generally add that as well to the feminist theme you mentioned, which is maybe more popular here. Is that also popular in Israel?
Good question. I think yes. I don't remember.
Okay.
Apparently, it's not as remembering of it as I am.
I'm into it. I like that theme.
Yeah.
Okay, no, see, I'm reading it here. Wikipedia says she was either executed or banished for her refusal to appear at the king's banquet to show her beauty as a Ahasuerus wished, and was succeeded by Queen Esther, a Jew, but a secret Jew. She only reveals it after, you know, she goes to her king and says, I have a very important thing I have to ask you. And he says, whatever you want, my love. So, you know, hooray for disobedient women. Well-behaved women rarely make history. So. Mm-hmm. The whole thing, right?
That was Esther said that?
No. That's been attributed. I've seen it attributed to everyone from Ruth Bader Ginsburg to like Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to look it up. Yeah, so I did not remember that story very well. This will be your first Purim here.
True.
Are you
sad that I'm not in Israel? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this year it's a little bit different, less happy than usually. But yeah, Purim is one of my favorite holidays. I usually have like 3 different costumes every year, like for every one Purim. And it is sad that I don't have where to dress up and wear a costume here and make my costume. And it's like a whole thing.
Oh, so you usually start like early on. You're thinking about maybe for a couple months, you're like, ooh, what do I want my costume to be for Purim?
Like 2 days after Purim is ended, me and my crazy friends started to think about our next year costume.
Oh, I love it. Because you see someone else's costume and you're like, man, that was awesome. I want to be something like that, but I could do it better.
Yeah, definitely. It's like walking around in a catalog of costumes and thinking about ideas for the next year.
That is super cool. Zeb, did you do the proper Israeli Purim when you were living there?
I think probably not enough. Not as much as Osnat, you also manage a staff of a few people. So you would always make them all do a group costume, right?
Yes.
And did you have to, you don't have to dress up as the characters, do you? Because I mean, traditionally, I feel like that's what we always, I guess
traditionally that is it. But in Israel, now it's definitely just any costume.
Awesome.
And there is no Halloween in Israel. So this is the costume festival.
But Halloween has to be like creepy things.
It doesn't have to be.
It doesn't anymore. You're right. That's the original.
Originally. Well, the original was, anyway, yeah. It all really started with the pranks. They started doing trick or treat so young boys would quit burning shit down for the most part. Again, I'll link to that. I can cite my source. It's Throughline. But yeah. So Purim starts at sundown, like all Jewish holidays. And it's only a 1-day holiday, unless you're in Jerusalem, apparently, or in any walled city or just Jerusalem.
I think any walled city.
Yeah.
And I fully butchered the story, so I should probably get a more succinct reading of it. In there somewhere.
Redo that one.
we used to have quite a time, but it sounds like you guys did it better as usual. And of course, then we get to eat hamantaschen, which supposedly are made in the shape of Haman's 3-pointed hat. Oh, Haman. Boo.
Wait.
That's also a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me
the shape of his hat.
What is it called in Hebrew?
Osnei Haman. It's the shape of his ears.
But why?
Haman's ears.
Why are Haman's ears different shaped than other people's ears?
That's a good question, but that's why we eat them, because they're in a triangle shape and it's his ears, so we eat them.
That's barbaric.
Right.
He tried to kill us, so we eat his ears.
By the way, both have a distinct... How are we going to translate the decapitating part of the story for kids?
Let's just stick with his ears. Wait, was he decapitated? I thought he was hung.
No, I don't know.
We're never going to get to the bottom of this. I think it's hilarious that you call it Haman's ears. I'm looking online. It says his hat.
Well, do you look in Hebrew? It's not what you check in Hebrew?
Yes. Working on it.
Okay. We're going to compare it. My Jewish learning says The carnivalesque Jewish holiday of Purim celebrates a tale of Jewish survival in the face of near genocide masterminded by the megalomaniac villain of the piece, Haman. Oh, and that was the other thing, probably my favorite part. We always got to make noisemakers. Did you guys ever do that?
Yeah.
This reminds me of, did you ever see that South Park where they have Moses, who is the glowing, he's like the, Moses is the god of summer camp?
No. And oh, he's like, yeah, he just told me about this.
I desire macaroni pictures. And in one of them, the glowing Moses, god of the Jews, is I desire noisemakers made of paper plates and beans. It's like, and we, I was dying because that's what we did. True. We made noisemakers made of paper plates, folded in half, full of beans and stuff. And then we would go to the Purim carnival, and every time we heard his name, we would shake it and go, boo! Oh, so the tradition of eating Hamantaschen on Purim, oh, this makes more sense, began in late 18th century Germany when pastries filled with poppy seeds were a popular treat. Oh, so I'm the right one.
Very late.
Everyone makes fun of me for eating the poppy seed, but that's the OG, and that's my favorite one. These cookies were called Montaschen, which translates to poppy seed pockets. In the early 19th century, Germany Jews started making them specifically for Purim and called them Hamantaschen because the name of the Purim villain Haman sounds like moan. Playing off the pun, it was said that the cookies stuffed with seeds represented Haman's pockets stuffed with bribes. Yet another interpretation. So they're his ears, they're his pockets, they're his hat.
Is that Taschen? It means pocket in German?
In some language. Apparently, there's also some language traditions that they eat his teeth and his eyes.
Gross.
Yeah.
Okay. The triangular-shaped pastry came to be understood not as Haman's pockets, but as his tricorn hat, though such a style would have been unlikely in ancient Persia. I was like, wow, that sounds a lot more like a
pirate hat.
Exactly. Yeah. I always thought of it as a pirate hat. And then it says in Israel, the pastries are called Ozne Haman. Yeah. Haman's ears. Oh, and don't worry, everyone. There's a midrash for that. Described the defeated Haman as doubled over with Oznai Mekutafot. I should probably let you say that. Clipped ears.
Mekutafot. Yeah. It's not a,
It's not a thing we say. We don't say clipped ears.
We don't say Mekutafot.
No, we don't clip people's ears anymore. We used to, but we're ashamed of it now.
So we changed it. We changed the rules. So there you go. For centuries, Sephardic Jews had a different Purim pastry called Haman's ears. Made of fried dough soaked in syrup or honey. Dang. That sounds way better.
That sounds better, yeah.
Today, Hamantaschen are enjoyed all over the world. So, these days, Nutella, strawberry. My favorite is still poppy seed. What's your favorite?
I like the original as well. Oh, what do you like?
Not poppy seed. Mm-hmm. Anything but poppy seed.
Dang. All right.
Just because it gets stuck in your teeth?
Because it's not good. It's for grown-ups. It's not for kids.
Well, I guess we know who's who here. I'm old. Well, happy Purim. Hag Purim. Moat. Nope.
Just one.
Hag Purim Sameach.
Hag Purim Sameach.
Yay. Hag Purim Sameach. Eat you some Hamantaschen. Check the links to get the story of Esther straight, because I did not.
Did we cover? Are there more? I feel like there's one more mitzvah we missed.
Drinking, wearing costumes.
You read the story.
Mishloach Manot.
Costumes. Mishloach Manot. Yeah. I guess that's it.
I'm just excited that there's commandments for a holiday that's not even religious.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have to do with partying.
That's true. That's true. Have a carnival.
Have a carnival. Drink till you black out. Eat
Sunday
a cookie.
School.
Hag Purim Sameach.
Purim Sameach.
Thank you for tuning in for our Purim Spectacular. This has been yet another episode of Jew-ish. If you like the show, please go ahead and drop us a 5-star rating and give us a follow. And most importantly, tell a friend. Word of mouth is by far the best way for people to find us. Please do check the show notes in this one. I have a lot of links because I was really stumbling along here. Thank you, Zeb and Oznat, for bailing me out. And we'll see you next time. Jew-ish is a Say More production.